Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks? It's me, Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. It's been a fun run lately. A lot of good conversations. I enjoy talking to creative people that do interesting things. I worry about it sometimes. I worry about when you talk to somebody like, let's say, Tony Kushner last week. When you talk to somebody that has a sort of intellectual and elevated sense of creativity and a sophistication and a sense of purpose and an idea of moving things forward in a progressive way, and you look at the culture we live in and you start to think like, well, is all that going to go away? Is all of that, when does that get steamrolled by stupidity? When does the sort of movements of progressive creativity start getting steamrolled by stupidity? I mean, they're already almost all marginalized to some degree. And this is just output. I'm not talking about individuals. I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about art in and of itself. Painting, jazz, poetry, things that were sort of kind of soul sustenance. Things that you may not do every day, but when you do them, you're sort of like, why don't I do these things every day? Why don't I nourish my brain with this type of creativity? I don't know what happens to it all. And maybe I'm just becoming an old guy, but it just seems that there's a consolidation of, you know, dumb output going on that seems to be kind of like a tsunami, just kind of steamrolling and blowing over the kind of more delicate, more fragile, more personal, actually more risky voices and output. I don't know. I just think that, you know, once the stupid decide on a uniform, we're all in trouble, and I guess we'll all be eating the same thing and listening to the same marching band. Who knows, right? How's it going? Everybody okay? Chris Spencer's on the show today. He's a comedian. I work with him all the time. He came up to me like a couple weeks ago, and he's like, can I do your show? I'm like, haven't you been on the show? Have I done that many podcasts where now I'm sort of, I'm not sure who's been on and who hasn't? I guess so. It's got to be almost 1,300. I guess that happens. He's been around a while. He's worked and written with the Wayans brothers, with Jamie Foxx, Chris Rock. He's good friends with and produces things with and works with Kevin Hart. His big break was a million years ago hosting the Vibe talk show. And that was sort of what was interesting to me. You know, just going back with a dude that's been in it that long, you know, probably a little less time than me, has had some big breaks or thought to be big breaks at the time and sort of survived them not being big breaks. And we got to talking about stuff, man. I just remembering things about coming up in this business and just the living in this city. I'm in New York right now. I didn't tell you I was coming, but that's where I am. I'm here. I'm in New York City. And I got to be honest with you. I'm an old man already. And this is the nicest hotel room I've ever stayed in. And it's not even that extravagant. It's a suite, but it's just so fucking tastefully done. Isn't that exciting? Isn't that a nice thing that, you know, at this age, you can experience sort of like, oh, like I've been in a lot of hotels in my life. I've even been in some really nice ones. One night I stayed at, what's that hotel in Austin? There's some old ass hotel in Austin. And somehow or another, I was put in the LBJ suite. And it was like, you know, leather furniture, It was huge. I think there was like a kitchen in it. The Driscoll. That must be it, right? The Driscoll? Sure. I think that's it. And somehow or another, I'm in this LBJ suite. And it was way too much room for me. There was like a dining room. It was crazy. And as extravagant as that was, that should have been like, this is really amazing. This is an amazing hotel room. But I was there for one night. I was literally in that room for like 6 hours. I couldn't even, sit on all of the furniture or even use all the rooms or even, I don't even think I had time to masturbate in the LBJ suite. But right now I'm down in Soho, and I don't know if it was just redone or what, but the decor, and maybe I'm just getting old and soft, I don't know, is just stunning down to every detail. The windows are glorious. I usually stay on the east side, but now I'm in Soho. I don't know if it's a step up. It's kind of a step sideways on the island. And I want to live in this room. Maybe that's what I'm working towards. Maybe someday I'll just have enough money and not enough to do, and I'll just spend my last days in a hotel, slowly losing my mind. Nice hotel. That's all I'm saying. I've been here for like 2 days, and it's always great to come to New York. I mean, the weather, although it's cold, it's clear, it's sunny, it's crisp, and it's fucking spectacular. I love being here. I love being in this city. I think I only like it for a few days, but I don't know. There's some part of me, I'm looking to do something different, before everything gets ugly. I mean, it's already pretty ugly, but, I don't know how much time I got left. So, there's part of me that thinks, maybe you should live part-time in New York. What for? I can barely go to the comedy clubs here. I don't know why. I just don't feel like it. But it's great being here. I got here the other night. I came in a night early so I could go to dinner with my buddy Sam Lipsight. And as some of you know, I've been sort of fasting and dieting and COVIDing. And when I got here, it was as if I had never eaten before. And I have an odd relationship with food and overeating, but Jesus Christ, it's been fucking awesome. Sam and I went over to Kiklides, which is this Greek seafood joint. They got one out in Queens. I got one here. We always go there. The next day, Brendan came over. We did an interview, Roy Wood Jr. in the hotel room here at the suite. Then we went out and got pizza, Prince Street Pizza. The square kind. I guess there's two places to eat pizza in New York. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's up for debate and argument. But go to Joe's over on Carmine at 6th, or apparently this Prince Street place, which I'd never been to, but it's the square style rectangle pizzas. Crispy bottom. Had the margarita slice and a pepperoni slice. It was awesome. Heart jamming. Then I went over to, me and Brendan went over to Ferrara, the 100-year-old Italian pastry place that my grandma used to take me when we come into the city. Had a ricotta cheesecake and a sfagliatelle, with the clam-shaped thing with ricotta in it. Oh, my God. Then last night I went to Balthazar. Oh, I can't. Why am I just, what is this? Why is all my, I love to eat and I hate it. I just can't, I can't win. I can't win in my body. I can't win in this vessel with me. I do okay with other people, but with me, I'm not winning. Always losing. Here's what's going on. This is why I'm in New York. DreamWorks flew me out here. We're doing some press-related stuff for this animated film I'm in called The Bad Guys. It's me, Sam Rockwell, Craig Robinson, Tony Ramos, Zazie Bates, Alex Borstein, Awkwafina. It's positioned to be a pretty big animated film, and I had not seen a full cut. And we're here to do this press-related stuff for 2 days. That's why I'm here in New York. But last night, they screened the movie here at the hotel. Sam was there, and Zazie, and Lily Singh was there, and the director, producers, and some guests of ours. It was like 20 people. And we got to watch the film in its full, it's finished. And I'd never seen it before. And it's wild to see a whole animated movie where I play the snake. I'm Mr. Snake. Rockwell is Mr. Wolf. To make the adjustment, just watching it as myself, about a third of the way into the movie, it was like I was the snake, and it was emotional and engaging and exciting. I couldn't, the movie's great, and it's about friendship in a way, and it was just so goddamn sweet and so spectacular. I'm thrilled about it. I don't know what to tell you, man. I come back to this city. I think about my past here. I think about living on the Lower East Side. you know, less than a mile away from where I am right now in the nicest hotel room I've ever been in my life, sitting in a fucking one-room apartment on the Lower East Side, waiting till 10:30 at night to go do my one spot, just sitting there and with hardly a kitchen, bed on the floor, and now I'm over here. I mean, it took, 30 years, 35 years, but now I'm over here in this beautiful room, and I just watched an animated movie with me in it, made by DreamWorks. Sometimes you got to be grateful. I mean, it could have gone either way. It could have gone any way. It could have gone, you know, I could be on the wrong side of the fucking grass, man. We all will, but I mean, why ruin a moment of gratitude? Why ruin a moment of gratitude with death? Let's turn it to gratitude. As, you know, we're in the final days of democracy and maybe the planet Earth, because, you know, the bad guys win almost always. Let's find a little room for gratitude, for our journeys, for our appreciation of life. Let's find a moment. And let's listen to me and Chris Spencer lay it out. Lives in show business. Great guy. Funny guy. You can see him regularly at the Comedy Store with me sometimes. You can go to his Twitter, at the Chris Spencer, to see where he's on tour. He'll be in Virginia Beach this Friday and Saturday at the Funny Bone. And this is me talking to Chris back in the garage studio back in L.A.
So what was it? What are you shooting, man?
I shot.
It's over.
I shot a feature.
But no, today?
Oh, today. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Today, Kevin Hart has this show called Game Face or Face Off something.
Now, okay, let's just back up a minute. How many shows does Kevin Hart have?
Jesus Christ. Just when I thought he had enough. He has a virtual game show.
Uh-huh.
And today, Charlamagne the God, who's on The Breakfast Club, and then the singer Saweetie, and then me and my wife, and we played like the easiest game you've ever seen in your life. It was like...
So this is a Kevin Hart game show, and then he's got a radio thing, right? Yeah, yeah.
He has everything.
Yeah.
I have a podcast. Not a podcast. It was going to be a podcast.
You still do the one with Al? No.
No. We were like the first. It was like me and you and somebody else.
I remember.
This podcast world star. Yeah, it was called Minivan Men. Me, Maz Jobrani, and Al. And
Al's very big now. He's very hard to get hold of. You know,
so here was my problem with podcasts.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. So I was trying to be funny and they weren't. And I was like, how come nobody's trying to be funny? Why are you guys just talking?
Too much pressure. Just ease up. Relax.
Yeah, I kept trying to fucking do jokes. And they're just looking at
you're
me.
You're treating
like
it like morning radio?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I had the little bells and shit. And
So what happened?
So then I stopped doing it. And then they went on and I think they picked up. I think Sully McCullough did it a few times. And
Sully McCullough? I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yes, we went to college together.
You and Sully?
UCLA.
It's every time I'm hanging out with you, you always bring up dudes where I'm like, what? Yeah, that guy.
That's our generation.
He was around. It's our generation. You're my age.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm a few years older.
Barely.
But I'm 58.
I'm 61.
No. Like, when did that happen?
I just wanted to win. I'm 54.
But Sully, like, what's that guy doing?
Sully's writing, producing.
Doing all right?
Yeah. You remember that big documentary it was a while back? I forgot it was about stand-up and Seinfeld was in it and all these people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he helped produce that.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of writing.
Like, I used to see him around. It's just like, I don't know what happens to people anymore. We're fucking old.
Well, you
like,
know what?
What?
A lot, I've noticed. They quit.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them become writers.
No, I know that one.
Then there's
the smart ones.
Here's the other ones that you don't know about. They go do cruise ships.
No, I know that one too. That's a sad one.
Sad, but they're still doing what they, I mean. For you know,
I guess it's.
I wish this was TV so they could saw your face. Yeah, it's the G League, but still they're playing. They're playing.
No,
ball.
I know.
Here's what's funny.
I just don't know. I could never, like, I'm fortunate. No one would ever ask me to do that or think to do it.
Here's what's so funny. I was going through something where I couldn't get a job, but I was I'm about to do the cruise.
When was this?
Before marriage and kids. So that's 16, about 20 years ago. I couldn't get any of these cruises to hire me.
No. Like, that's the word.
I'm like, damn, I can't get hired on a cruise.
It's a blessing. It's a blessing. But some of those dudes, they just live with it. That's just their life. Listen, I guess you adapt to whatever the fuck you're going to adapt to.
You ready for another name?
What?
Steve White.
Oh, geez.
He fucking even moved to Florida so he could be closer to the boats.
No, I know a guy that did that in, like, Portland.
He's killing.
Steve White. He was like a hybrid of a, like he was like a Warren Thomas spinoff.
Jesus, great name.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember that guy?
He was a genius.
Great.
We worked together.
You and Warren?
We did a sketch show for Jamie Foxx we were trying to put together. This is when he was sick.
Yeah.
And
sick and still doing drugs.
Still doing drugs.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, Warren Thomas, was it HIV he died of?
Yes, he died of HIV. That
he used to come to work and fuck with us. Like, he'd have scabs and shit, and we'd be around, he'd be picking his scabs. And so, I don't know if you know who Marcus King is. He's Jamie Foxx's manager, and another writing friend of mine named Johnny Mack, who was an incredibly funny writer.
Yeah.
And Marcus King said, listen, Warren is going to be working with us. No fucking AIDS and HIV jokes. Yeah. Just come on. He's just,
Yeah.
And we were like, cool. But Warren would go after Johnny Mack and my friend Buddy Lewis all the time, and they never went back at him because of the mandate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then one day, Johnny Mack said, fuck you, Marcus, and he fucking tore Warren a new asshole. Oh, they went at him. He wanted to fight.
He was great, and he was an intense guy. But yes. But I remember Steve White was like Warren Thomas light.
Yes,
doing that thing, that sort of pseudo improv paced thing.
Yes,
that's
very fucking funny. Steve White used to make me scream.
Did you ever know Reggie McFadden?
Come on, the gold digger.
I get like an email from him once every 2 years that he's got 9 wives and he's in Africa.
Yes. He's the Nigerian guy with the email saying he lost his money.
He had that thing where he's just, when he got angry, it was funny.
Here's what's funny. Reggie wasn't funny right here.
Yeah. Very serious and weird.
Some comedians are able to manufacture the art of stand-up.
Yeah.
But then they're not funny people.
Tell me about
it. He's humorous.
Yeah.
But he's not like...
weird?
It's weird, right?
No, but there's a lot of guys. I mean, we've been doing it a long time. I know guys that got funny. Yeah, and that like off stage is like nothing going on.
Right.
But sometimes with those guys, you just got to get the hang of them.
Right. But let me tell you what you also find out is that when you talk to their family, they go, I can't believe he's a comedian. He was never funny.
But they know they are. I watched like Jeff Ross get funny. I couldn't watch Jeff Ross when we started out together.
Really?
Oh, he's just so boring.
Right.
And he had a mullet, and his name was Jeff Lifschultz. And
no,
he was
just, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was. And he's telling long stories. I'm like, why is this guy working?
This is New York?
Yeah.
Lifschultz. Shit.
Jeff Lifschultz.
He wasn't going to make it.
No.
No.
No, right. Had to switch it to Ross.
Lifschultz.
Yeah. But that's the thing about, I guess, with you, because I don't know that we knew each other before. I remember Al mentioned you. I didn't really know you then, but I kind of remember you getting a big break and being on billboards for a thing.
Right.
And you had a full, like, goatee thing going on, right? And hair.
I used to be cute, yeah.
Right, right. And it was for, was that the Vibe thing?
Yeah, I had a late night talk show.
That was
1997 for like an hour. As I started to Google you, I saw a picture of you clean-faced and short hair, and I was like, oh, I remember him.
Yeah.
And now we've been hanging at the store for like the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And it just hit me that's, you were him.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That happens.
That's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
But you were always out here.
Yeah, but I would come out there with Steve, go see Steve and Chappelle, and I would see you and Attell and all those guys.
Yeah.
But it was crazy that I saw the short hair picture.
Like,
I was
that guy.
It was like, that's why I knew your voice.
Right, right,
and
right.
And your mannerisms.
Right, right, right. From back in the day.
From back in the day, yeah.
But like, so what? Where the hell did you come from?
I'm born and raised here.
Really?
Yep. Grew up in Englewood and then moved not too far from here in South Pasadena. Went to high school there. Graduated from UCLA where I met Sully. And he and I started doing stand-up.
What's the family situation? Both your parents from here?
Both Jamaican.
They're both Jamaican?
Both Jamaican.
They talk like Jamaican?
Like Jamaican, yeah.
Yeah, with the accent?
Yeah. My dad's accent is stronger than my mom's, but...
It's a great accent.
It's a great accent, yeah. But
did you have it?
Never.
Mm.
And even when I try to do it, I sound good to you.
Yeah.
But if some Jamaican people were here, they'd be like, are you from Ireland? Like, why is your accent? What's wrong? Where are you from? Australia? Because that shit is not us.
How many siblings do you have?
I hate saying it like this. But I have to say it like this. I have a sister that we both have same mom and dad.
Yeah.
And then I have a brother who my dad remarried. And then I have a stepsister.
Okay. But none of them are in show business?
None of them are in show business. No.
So how does this start? Inglewood, what was the neighborhood like?
So Inglewood is hood, but not really.
Yeah.
Parts of it. There's definitely hood parts.
Yeah.
So it was like hood with both parents.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you had Crips and Bloods who had a pool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
right.
It was a great, great living environment. My block was like a lot of middle class, working class people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lawyer here, and there's a dentist over there, and there's a mailman here, and then there's some drug dealers right here. So
not far.
My mom had the greatest intuition on when to move.
Yeah.
Crack came to Inglewood in February of 83.
You know the month.
March of 83.
It was like Valentine's Day or something?
Yeah. No, it came on Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
It came, and we moved February 83, and crack came March of 83. Like, literally, I saw all of my friends starting to make money, and then them telling me stories about, you know who's smoking, you know who's doing, and I was like...
How old were you?
Let's see, 84, 16, 16.
Yeah, wow.
15, 16 when we moved.
So you saw people go down?
I didn't see it. Yeah. I missed it.
But you had friends.
I had friends, and here's what's funny. So... I was selling weed.
Yeah.
You know, it was you know.
You can say that.
Everybody.
It's just statute of limitations
on
that.
Yeah. That was, 1983, guys, 82. And, you know, everybody did.
Yeah.
And then the next thing, of course, crack came and my friends were selling crack.
Yeah.
And so I was recently at a funeral and this guy saw me and he goes, "What's your name, man?" I was like, "Chris." He's like, "Spencer?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, you moved to, you and your family moved to like this white neighborhood, right?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, man, thank God you moved." I go, "Why?" He said, "You would have been a kingpin." I was like, "What kind of compliment diss was that?"
Yeah.
He was like, "Yeah, you were always smarter than us. You would have made some fucking money." I was like, "Kingpin?" And it's so funny. In my head, I'm always wondering, who would I have been? I was a little too scared to do too much dangerous shit, but who would I have been? Would I have been the connector? Like, you know, this person needs that. Meet them on Crenshaw on 113th.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know who I would have been. So it's always plagued me, like, damn, I wonder.
Yeah, I always play that game with, like, who would I have been if I had confidence?
You have confidence.
I do now. But if I was self-assured when I was, like, 20.
Right, can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
If I knew what the fuck, you know, how to organize my life.
No, I listened to you and Santino, and you had said, I just figured out show business 3 years ago, and I fucking screamed. Sometimes it happens later.
Dude, I mean, but you know. I mean, like, you can be in it. If anyone knows, you know, where you think you got these opportunities. You just realize that you're a fucking puppet.
Exactly.
And the only way to get out of being a puppet is to do your own thing or make a lot of money for somebody.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you get run up the flagpole and no one's like, "Man, I'm gonna salute that flag."
Fuck yeah. Showcase after showcase, agent after agent, manager after. You know what? I need new pictures. Remember that?
Oh, dude.
That was their excuse for that's why you're not getting no work.
You gotta get some new heads. I was thinking the other day about when my manager, who was Dave Becky, the biggest manager in show business, couldn't get me a fucking break, you know? But I remember he's like, "You gotta do VH1 once you do these things." These interstitial things, but not the funny show thing. It was before those things. It was just basically a VJ job. So he said, "Just do a couple. Maybe you can be yourself."
Right.
And I'm like talking about Toni Braxton. I don't know who she is today.
Hilarious.
And he's like, "That's great." But I like to think, he's like, "It's a great gig." And I'm like, "This is the fucking worst."
Right.
Because they all think they know what you are.
Right.
But you don't know, and they certainly don't fucking know, and you just sort of do it.
Because you want to check.
Yeah, or you want a break.
You want a break.
Yeah, you know, it's like the money, sure, I'll take money, but it was like, if I was only in it for the money, why would I do this?
Right. You want a break. That's a fucking good sentence.
Right?
You want a break.
That's all. Like, you know, I want something to stick, man. Right. Why can't I be the guy that everybody, you know, was talking about?
I remember when I got the late night talk show.
Vibe,
yes. And I thought,
what year's that?
1997.
So what's going on? What's the idea? We need a black late night show.
Exactly. Arsenio had just retired.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know what? There's a void in late night black in an urban late night.
Yeah.
So they hired me to do Vibe.
Yeah.
But at the same fucking time, they hired Keenan Ivory Wayans to do the Keenan Ivory Wayans show.
I remember that.
And we launched at the same time on the same day.
Yeah.
So basically
different networks.
This small, underserved black audience now had to choose between me and Keenan. And so I did 11 weeks. Keenan went on. And then remember, I got replaced by Sinbad. And then Sinbad and Keenan battle. And then Sinbad was gone.
What networks were
these? Keenan was gone. I was syndicated.
Yeah.
Keenan was on Fox.
Yeah.
And then,
so that was after In Living Color.
Oh yeah, after In Living Color.
Wait, right.
Then we all went away, and then Magic was there.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of what happened.
Magic. Anyway, I mean, he was just things. They were like, "Who can we get more popular in black?"
Yeah.
Magic.
But Keenan, I remember when I was a doorman at the Comedy Store, I'd see him do stand-up sometimes. You know, he's like the mystery man in a way.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean? But I remember he came, he was hosting that show for a minute.
Right.
And
Keenan was a guy that discovered writing was his ticket early.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was writing with Eddie, writing with Townsend.
Yeah, right, right. The Hollywood Shuffle.
Yeah, and then his brother Damon, of course.
I used to watch Damon
comedian.
All the time. I used to watch him when I was a doorman. I used to watch him all the time.
You were a doorman at the Comedy Store?
I was, 86, 87.
80. Wow.
Yeah, that's where I, yeah, I, right after college, I went and, you know, just got all fucked up on blow with Kennison and all that. But I was the door guy, right? Wow. So I was there and I was watching everybody.
Where's that script?
I don't know. Does anyone give a shit?
Yes, look at my face. You're fucking doing cocaine with Kennison? It's like, it's like Almost Famous, but with comedians.
Oh, I learned a couple of lessons, like, you know, never be part of an entourage. Sorry, man. Is that going to...
No. I purposely make sure I'm not in an entourage.
Good, good.
I'm friends with... I'll go have Christmas with Jamie Foxx, and then I'll go have Thanksgiving with Kevin.
Yeah.
And then I go play golf with Cedric, but I'm not... Nobody can say... This is my clique.
Well,
I'm in
the
clique.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be the guy that's like, Chris, you want to go get the... No.
You heard in the podcast with Kevin, it was like, I'm never going to be the guy when you go, Chris, hold my phone.
Yeah.
Fuck that. No. I'd rather be broke.
So, okay, so you're out, you get out of Inglewood, and then where do you move?
I moved to South Pasadena.
That's where you grew up then, a little bit.
Inglewood.
16.
Two years. Graduated, went to PCC, Pasadena City College.
What'd your dad do?
My father was I want to say entrepreneur, but you have to be successful, right?
Right, sure.
Yeah, he had businesses.
He's an idea man?
Yes. Furniture store, restaurant.
I love that.
Creating a board game.
Oh, really? The board game?
Yeah. He has a new recipe for fried chicken.
Oh, like, one that's going to take over the world?
Yes. He's like, can you get this to somebody? I'm like, I can't. And so...
that's recent.
Yes. He just mentioned the... He didn't mention the chicken. He mentioned the board game the other day.
No. Have you tried the fried chicken?
It's fucking incredible.
It is.
It's fucking incredible.
What makes
incredible.
It good?
I think he put sugar in it. I don't know. He did something. He's cheating because it shit... I got diabetes immediately. I don't know what it is.
You played the board game?
Yeah, the board game is great.
It is?
I haven't played it in 30 years. He goes, I dusted it off.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
What's it called?
You count.
Yeah. That's all right.
Literally, he paid a lot of money to get this board. It looks professionally done.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's time. And it'd be fucking, what if it is time? You know what I mean? I should probably go take a look at it.
Yeah. So that's going to happen?
Yes. I should call him right now. you'd laugh at hearing
me. But when he was trying to put it together, did he sit you guys down?
We were kids.
Yeah. So
we're talking like 40 years ago.
Right.
Yes.
And yet.
We're soon rich. You count is going to take us out tonight. We didn't live in a hood, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But but the restaurant, like, it must be kind of fun to have a dad that
furniture stores.
Just fucking does everything.
Furniture.
This is what we're doing now.
Yes. But his biggest job, which he wasn't good at, was gambling.
Oh, yeah. Really? He had that thing?
Oh, my God. The race, he was a horse guy.
Oh. I'm so glad I never got that one.
Me either.
I mean, like, some guys got it so bad.
A lot of our friends.
I know.
Like, when poker came, oh, my God.
I'm just too volatile. I can't pretend.
Yes.
I don't like losing money.
I don't either. And my ADD can't let me sit at this table that goddamn long.
No, I can't do that. Even if I go to Vegas and I lose, like, $500, I'm like, that's
I'm done.
The worst.
It's
the worst.
Yeah.
I guess I've never won enough money to justify the excitement of doing it.
And then you have friends like your aunt. I won $16,000 on the slots.
Fuck,
you're like, dude. Which, and then here's what's funny. People go, which machine? Like, that machine's about to pay out again.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. What'd your mom do?
My mom worked for Delta Airlines for 35. Whoa, no. Remember Western Airlines?
Yeah.
The only way to fly.
Yeah.
She worked for Western, and then which got bought by Delta. She worked there for 36, 37 years.
They took care of her?
Took care of her.
That's great.
I can still get passes if I want to.
You can?
But I will not.
Why?
Because I'm tortured as a kid.
Yeah. In what way?
When people used to tap us on the shoulder and go, some full paying passengers want your seat.
Yeah.
That's one. Second, about 25 years ago, I said, you know what? I'm going to take a pass.
Yeah.
And one of the people from Delta called my cousin and said, it was right after Vibe.
Mm.
And it was like, Chris, is your cousin okay? And they're like, what? Yeah, he's flying non-rev. He's like, what? He had to get a buddy pass to come to Atlanta. Does he need anything? I'm like, tell him my fucking mom works for the airlines. He goes, I couldn't tell him anything. So I was like, I'm never
so
taking a pass.
Pride.
Again.
Pride is going to stop you from taking a pass.
I can afford first class now. Yeah. I'm taking first class
every time.
That's
the best. Every time.
Every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like, you know, I don't have a wife or family or debt. Like, there's only a few things that where I'm like, I'm going to do that.
Right. But here's what's messed up now.
Yeah.
First class ain't that special. I mean, they're starting to give us food again.
Yeah.
But for a while, it was like coach with bigger seats. You know what I mean?
Well, it depends where you're going, because some of those first class where you get your own apartment.
Yes.
Those are nice.
So I've been studying. I have a friend who told me about, is a seat guru or one of them.
Yeah.
She goes on there and sees the plane, and then she figures out the trip.
Right.
She's like, oh, 777 at 12:15, that's the plane I'm taking.
Because she knows the real perks.
Yes.
But I don't like, then there's a concierge. And now, while these are we're about to sort of explore the area of hack bits.
Yes.
Like the concierge, like who gets seated? Who does that bit?
I don't know, but I'm sure 25 people do.
Yeah. Like you just don't, you're not important.
I remember the first time I saw somebody, it was Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I saw her early, and all of a sudden, I didn't see her, and then I saw her in the seats. I was like, how'd you get here? And she just kind of smiled. I was like, they fucking drove her around, and she went up into the plane. And then that happened to me once, and I was like, oh.
You did that once?
One time I was late for a plane.
Yeah.
And they were like, a Porsche Cayenne pulled up. Said, Mr. Spencer? I go, yeah, this way. And they took me outside, and went around, I got in a car, and they drove me across the airport into another plane.
Really?
I was like, how do I get this all the time?
Yeah.
They go, you can't. And then they took off.
Who set that up for you?
I have no clue.
Because that happens. Now there's that place where you can go
right.
at the airport.
Yes.
And you just sit there and you can shower or whatever the fuck that is.
Right.
Like Gavin DeBecker, his company, right, started that thing where it's like some sort of concierge service.
They
should
have been had that.
Thousands of dollars a year.
I'm a shower before I leave.
Huh? Yeah.
How about that? Don't you shower?
Yeah, I don't know what it
is.
But,
you know,
I don't know what
house.
The perks are.
Right.
I just know. I'm just excited. I have the global entry card,
I know.
The TSA makes me very excited.
So I have a wife.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have global entry.
Oh.
And I've been telling her for 6 years.
Wow.
And the other day there was a long ass line, and I'm almost was like, bye.
Oh no! I'll see you later.
Like we had clear.
Yeah.
But now.
Oh,
I had to do it because she didn't have a TSA.
Yeah, that's where you just got to go. See you on the other side.
I wanted to leave her.
You couldn't do it.
She told me to go.
Yeah.
But she said it like that. I was like, I'll be right here. Just go. And I was like, motherfucker, I've been telling your ass.
Why were you pouting?
I was just looking at her like, because it was a lot, you know. She's got the little booties that she made, and I'm like, I don't normally take off my shoes, honey.
Oh yeah, I can't. I don't like to take mine off.
Mm-mm.
They always got metal in them. Anyway, so
and a knife? No,
no. It's just like I wear boots.
Oh right.
I don't wear sneakers, and I don't like to pack shoes.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna wear the shoes that I wear.
I love your gear.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
It's like Dean Del Rey gear.
Yeah. Well, that's who got me these. Like, that's who he set me up with, the guy.
Yeah.
These shoes. Yeah. But I get mine dirty. He doesn't get anything dirty.
Oh, no. He's clean.
Totally.
Him and his little friend.
Yeah, no Scuff Dean, man.
No
Scuff Dean. It's all about resale with Dean.
Right.
Like, as long as he doesn't fuck things up, he can sell it.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
Yeah.
My daughter's like that.
Really?
She buys and trades sneakers all the time. And sometimes she walks so she won't wrinkle them. And I'm like, what are you, just fucking wear the shoes.
Yeah.
My kids have a better sneaker collection than me.
I don't know about sneakers.
No,
I stopped a long time ago. I wear them when I exercise, and that's
really?
It. But I have no fashion sense of sneakers. I saw you and who were you talking to that night about? Oh, Jeremiah.
Yeah, he had on some sweet ass sneakers. I was like, I didn't expect him to have those. I was like,
what were they?
Where'd you win these?
Yeah.
Yeah,
what were they?
He had on some kind of Nikes that I had never seen.
See, what do Nikes make 10, 20 things a month or what? Is there a new Nike?
More than that.
Oh, really? See, this is the downside of not having kids.
Right.
Is I don't know what the fuck has happened.
Trust me.
Because they drive the whole world.
They do.
So, like, I'm completely out of the loop.
Yes.
Zero.
I never thought I'd be this guy, but I'll be dancing, and my daughter would be like, don't do that. I'm like, I'm a good dancer. And she goes, yeah, maybe in 87. I'm like, fuck. Literally, when I get dressed, I go knock on her door and ask her, how does this look?
Yeah. How does that go?
She's like, no, take those off. You can't wear that. And I listen to
her. Is she right?
Every time.
So when do you start doing comedy? When the hell does that happen?
That happened in college at UCLA. Sully and I would go around. Fraternity houses would have rush week.
God, what year is that, dude?
This is 1988.
So you've really been doing it as long as I have,
yeah.
Right?
Rush, and then they would have, you know, all the guys come to see if they want to join this fraternity. Yeah. And they'd have shows.
But you guys weren't doing open mics. You're jumping right
in. And then we did the Natural Fudge and open mic at the Comedy Store and Laugh Factory and all the sign-ups. We did all that shit.
89,
yep.
Shit, that's right when I left. That's right when I fucking freaked out on cocaine and left.
Really?
Maybe 86, 87.
L.A. just became too much for you?
I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, man. I graduated college in 86.
Where'd you go?
BU. I'm a little drunky already.
Right.
And I go home for the summer and then I come out here, audition for Mitzi. And some, by a freaky way, circuitous or whatever the word is, way, mm-hmm. I end up getting a job as a doorman, because she remembers me.
Right.
I auditioned for her right when I got out here and I didn't even know what I was doing. And then I got a job as a PA on something she was producing just by coincidence. So I went and said, "Do you remember me?" She's like, "Oh, yeah, why don't you be a doorman?" So there I was. I was a doorman, 87. Peak Kennison, peak Dice, peak drugs, peak crazy, peak porn. Right. It was fucking crazy.
And then you said, "I got to get the fuck out of L.A. so I can get my
life." I lost my mind.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, was it just partying?
Well, I was living in Crest Hill, dude. I was living in the house behind the Comedy Store. So I can, that
you
was
were
like,
there?
Yeah. So that was like the party central. I'd be the guy that Sam would have go buy all the booze and get the house set up. So it's just like I was not getting any sleep. And I started to hear voices in my head. And then I had a falling out with all those weirdos. And the story is sort of like I was in the parking lot of the store losing my mind, breaking glasses and shit, like losing it. And the drug dealer came. Shit pulled up and I'm like, "Dude, man, fuck them. They fucked up and like they fucking fucked me up." And the drug dealer said, "Yeah, you gotta go do your own thing." So when the drug dealer tells you to go,
wow,
it's time to go. So I literally packed up my car and gave away a bunch of shit and just like left out of my mind. Took me years to get my mind back.
And you were doing stand up in Boston?
I went home to Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
Gotcha. Yeah, and then I cleaned up that first time. Then I went to Boston and just started up again. Yeah, in 88, I came in second in a big competition. I started working 88.
Who beat you?
Sue McGinnis. You wouldn't know.
You know what's funny? Second place guys are usually the ones that blow up.
I did that in the San Francisco, too, competition.
Chris Tucker, second place, Soul Train competition.
Yeah.
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
What was it called? Three star. I'll give you three stars. Star Search.
Oh, yeah.
Second place is the guy.
Did you ever do a contest?
Yeah.
What?
Just a little local.
Oh, one. Not televised?
No.
I couldn't do that.
Jay. I couldn't do it.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, so you're doing open mics.
Doing open mics, doing stand-up. Then I get discovered.
Have you ever a special?
I shot one, a half hour, about how old is my daughter, 14, 15.
Yeah. Feels like you need a special.
I do need a special. I'm shooting one in June.
Yeah?
I'm going to shoot one in June.
All right.
Yeah.
So you're doing the open mics, and what happens?
And then I get seen by a manager named J.P. Williams,
yeah,
who was Jeff Foxworthy's manager, and he's like, "I got an idea."
Oh, I think I know this guy.
Yeah. He had me open up for Jeff Foxworthy. So I was the opening act on the
Before he was Redneck? Before he was...
On the Redneck tour, not the Blue Collar tour. It was a Redneck tour, and I was the opening act.
So he'd already had the hook.
He had the hook. He had the books and everything.
Oh, shit. I did one of my first middle spots when I was back in Albuquerque after I left L.A. when I started doing comedy for him before he had the hook.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice guy then.
Such a nice guy.
Was he then too?
Always.
Oh, all right. Always. So you're the guy?
I'm the guy. I'm the opening act on the Redneck tour.
How'd that go?
It was weird.
Yeah.
Like we'd be in an audience, I'd be like, after the show, people are like, "You were funny, black comedian." I'd be like, "Thanks, white cowboy."
black comedian.
That's how they would say, "Black comedian, you were funny." "I didn't think you'd be funny."
How did they not think you'd be funny?
I don't know.
So how long did you do that for?
Probably a year, 2 years.
And that guy managed you?
Yep.
So you were making money opening for Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah, making money. And then I started opening for Damon.
That's something, huh? To watch that guy. He did some wrong-minded shit, but it was so great.
Way early, right? And I used to want to be him. I was like,
he was so great to fucking watch.
Yeah, physical.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right?
Totally.
He used to say, "If I don't sweat tonight, I didn't have a good set." He would like to sweat.
He loves his stand-up.
Loves stand-up.
So you're opening for him on the road? Was he big?
Me and Sean. Yeah, this was like Living Color.
You and Sean?
Sean Wayans, his brother, yep.
Before Marlon was doing stand-up?
Before Marlon wasn't even thinking about stand-up.
Sean was okay, I guess, right?
Yeah, Sean's an incredible writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sean sometimes would just fucking, he would blow all of us away. Yeah.
So that was after Living Color?
Living Color was still on,
yeah,
but not with Damon. Damon had gotten to a point where he was coming back and they were giving him $75,000 a sketch.
Wow.
And I thought that was $1 million a sketch.
It is $1 million a sketch, isn't it?
I felt like it. I was like, $75,000.
So you're just the opening guy?
I'm the opening guy.
Are you starting to get bitter?
Not at all. Okay. I'm fucking excited.
Are you having a good
Damon
time?
I'm learning how to dress,
yeah,
fly like him. Like he would shop. I had never seen anybody shop without trying shit on. He'd be like, give me this, 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 give me this.
Yeah.
And we'd be out of town. I'm like, what if it doesn't fit? He goes, I'll give it to Marlon. I'm like, fuck, you got money.
I'll give it to Marlon.
And then he would do these theater dates, and sometimes you get paid in cash. I'm like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. So yeah. What were your, how much time did you have?
I did 15.
Yeah?
15, 20.
And that's how you started? Like, you didn't have to do... Like, you didn't work out that much before that? You just got
I mean, I'm still doing local spots here.
Yeah?
And I was a regular at the Laugh Factory and the Improv. I wasn't a Comedy Store guy.
Yeah, I never went to those other places.
I thought the Comedy Store was dirty.
It is.
Ugh. I was like, these aren't my kind of comedians.
They weren't?
You know, I thought I was trying to be Seinfeld. I had the little jacket on and everything.
Oh, I could never deal with the Laugh Factory. And I never, the Improv was always too much pressure and you're going to get bumped by fuckers.
Right.
And yeah. it was never a good room.
No, I got, especially the one in Santa Monica.
Oh, that's different. That Santa was a Monica. Big place.
Yeah, that was fun.
That's where they shot the show.
Yeah.
I did the evening at the Improv down there. It's a little better down there.
Listen, you can go online right now and see your old evening at the Improv.
I know. I can see. I can put them on my website.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're there.
I saw mine.
I'm not ashamed of them.
Oh, shit, yes. It's so funny. All of us, the clothes are awful.
Oh, terrible. I remember I bought a Stussy shirt down the street.
La Brea.
I took the bus back to a hotel with the woman who became my first wife after my evening at the Improv. I took a bus to a shitty... I didn't know how anything worked.
Isn't that funny? You just fucking were on TV.
Get on a bus.
High fives. And then,
kinda.
And then...
Yeah, just take the bus like an idiot.
Yeah.
I could. I mean, it's not like I was broke. I could have...
You could have took a cab.
Yeah, I just needed to humble myself somehow. Right. I don't want to get too big-headed.
And you did it.
I did it.
You did a good job humbling yourself.
Yeah, still doing it.
Fucking bust.
No. Yeah, I watch those things, and I always think like you know, I didn't know who I was or whatever, but like I watch it, I'm like, that's me.
Yeah.
It's really weird to watch them, and it's sort of, I'm just not confident, and I'm like, you know, I got jokes.
Right.
Like, I watch me, like, when I'm younger, and I'm like, I was doing this thing.
Right.
Like, it was my life, because I'm sort of like... I'm doing that repeating thing that you do when you do too much road. Like,
right.
You know what I'm talking about. Like milkshakes, right? Milkshakes. Everybody likes milkshakes, whatever the fuck it is.
Right.
But I'm doing all those tricks, and I'm like, wow.
Right, because you want to fucking... Because on the road, you're really trying to... You just want to get that time done.
Yeah. You want to figure it out.
Yep.
I just...
Were you a big road comic?
No, because I never understood that you had to do well to be asked back. I just had this idea.
That's
like,
hilarious. That's fucking hilarious.
Right? I just sort of like, I'm going to be me, man.
Right.
And it was not great.
That's funny. You have to do well to be asked about. You figured he called you once, he should call me again.
That's right. I'm me, man.
And now it's all about the fucking numbers. They could care less if you're funny.
Zero. They care less if you're a comedian.
Right.
What'd you do? You do dog tricks?
Perfect.
Can you sell tickets?
Can you sell tickets?
I remember when the first soap opera people started coming around. In Boston, no. And then there was also remember the trend where the star's brothers, like, you know, Tom Hanks' brother.
I used to hoop with him.
You what? Yeah,
at Damon Wayans' house, actually.
With Jim Hanks' brother,
Jim Hanks.
There was other guys, like there was a guy named Mark Godier, who was a Comedy Store guy, long haired guy, kind of looked like Jackson Purdue.
Right.
Last I heard, he was like a fisherman.
Wow.
And I'm like, that lucky fuck. You know, like, to just turn your back on this shit
and be
when
happy.
You know it's over and be like, I'm going to be a fisherman.
I bet he's happy as fuck, too.
Well, he's a fisherman. It's like, got nothing to do with this shit.
Right.
You're not sitting around going like, fuck. But okay, so you're coming up and you're opening for Damon. So when do you start getting some juice?
I start booking some little sitcoms and some commercials and 97, I guess, would be the big break, if you want to call it.
That's vibe. The vibe break?
That's the vibe break.
But you're doing like walk-on bits?
Walk-on bits. I did, remember Claudia Lano?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Claudia Lano had a show called, I can't remember. She had a show on Showtime.
I can't imagine it.
And I was on there. I think I did an episode or two.
Yeah.
But every now and then, you know, I'd pop up. I was in the movie The Sixth Man, and I did a lot of stuff with the Wayans family.
Yeah.
Don't Be a Menace to South Central. I did Low Down Dirty Shame. I did Blank Man. I did Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood.
So you're in with those guys.
I was an honorary. I would walk around with my eyes kind of slanted so people could think I was a Wayan.
So it's so there. So that's Damon, uh-huh. Keenan, uh-huh. Marlon, uh-huh. The other one, Sean.
And Kim. Those are all the ones that perform.
Right. But now the cousin, I interviewed the cousin.
Yes.
The gay cousin. Shantae.
Shantae.
Yeah, Shantae. She's great. She's his
And then Damon Jr.'s funny as shit.
I don't know if I've seen Damon Jr.
Oh, my God. He's brilliant.
Yeah?
He reminds you of Damon, though. It's spooky.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Damon, there's no one really that funnier than Damon, really, on a good night, right? Oh. It's so great to watch those fuckers. That was what was great about the Comedy Store.
Yes.
Watching
people.
Well, even like guys like that, like when I was there, like Kennison broke.
Right.
Right. Like, you know. He was on the road when I got there, and I didn't really even like him. I'd seen him on TV on the Rodney thing or whatever.
Right.
But I remember going to Carl LeBeau's apartment.
Carl LeBeau.
Yeah, he just died. And to watch the premiere of the HBO special that Sam had shot at the Roxy. And I just remember that there seemed to be like 1,000 pieces of sushi. It took up most of the apartment, but everyone was so jacked on blow, no one could eat any of it.
It's so and funny it just how there's like there. Like that part of comedy, I've never even seen.
What?
The drugs and the alcohol and the partying and the girls.
But the girls wasn't really, I don't know. Like it was never that glamorous when we were doing blow. No, it's just a bunch of dudes sitting around for 3 days just doing blow. Talking, listening to Sam
with
talk.
With no blowjobs? There's no girls anywhere?
Yeah, you've never done coke?
It never.
It takes a lot of work. Well, I mean, Sam would have a girl or two around, right. But no, it was no glamour to it. We were up in Crest Hill. One night we decided to burn the furniture in the fireplace. So, you know, that's the kind of Mitzi fucking, she just got so mad. I'm like, I don't know what happened.
Who else was living there? Where's Polly?
Oh, the fuck knows. Polly was 12. You know, gotcha. He had just started doing the bit, right? With the hat, and it was
anybody,
not even...
Anybody, yeah, Weasel, yeah.
It would be like a little before the Weasel. He had a composite headshot, you know, with the different...
Yes. Yes.
Five
filling up, a gas tank and then holding a cheeseburger.
Exactly.
That's funny. Polly.
No, who was living up there? Todd. Remember the Todd? Fat Todd?
The Todd, yes.
The Todd, yes. Uh-huh. He was who I lived with.
Oh my God.
And Schubert lived there for a minute. Uh-huh. Nancy Redman. Tamayo Atsuki.
Tamayo.
Yeah, who Sam used to fuck, right? Yeah. So that's why he would always party up there. Like we'd do blow for a day and then he'd end up pounding on her door. Tamayo! It's a fucking nightmare.
Was the house big?
Yeah. I lived in Dice's old room. I remember one time he came up there and he's like, you ever get a blow job in the tub? I'm like, I haven't done that
yet. Wait, Dice lived there too?
Briefly, yeah, back in the day.
Right.
Yeah, I had a good room. Yeah, remember Angel Salazar?
Angel.
Check it out.
Yes. Did you ever see any good comedy fights? Any comedians box?
There was a big night that I've talked about many times where it was like just Sam beating up a Satanist. Do you remember Larry Scarano? He's this little guy from Philly, I think. He used to work at the store. He's so funny because I ran into him years later. He's a guy that thinks everybody stole everything from him.
I know a couple of people like that.
Like, no, but this guy literally said, you know when a cop drives by and you hear the sirens, you know, and say, that's my ride, it's mine.
So he thinks the grocery cart hitting the back of your ankles is too?
He was funny.
Really?
I think I ran into him. I think he was like driving a cab or something. Now we're going to get, you know what's going to happen with this episode is I'm going to get emails.
Oh, yes.
And people are going to tell me what they're doing.
Right.
Or people are going to say like, I know that guy.
That's good.
Sure, man. It's nice to know people are still alive. Dude, I once middled in Albuquerque for Vince Champ.
Vince Champ! What a fucking story.
It's crazy.
That's the craziest story ever because he was a square.
Totally.
By day, by night, and then
a rapist.
A rapist,
like in the worst fucking horrendous
college
music departments. Jesus, that guy was like a bad impressionist. He did dumb characters.
Yes.
Was clean.
Corny,
talk like a white guy.
Corny as fuck.
Yeah,
they showed a. They did a. I don't know if an expose. They did something on him. He looks so fucking crazy now.
He's been in prison for what 20 some odd years?
At least. Is he never getting out?
I don't think so. I don't know. So, all right. So, it's 97, you get the vibe break after doing
vibe
this
break,
and that.
I do that for 11 weeks, and then I'm back hitting the pavement.
Oh, but dude, how fucking horrible was that?
Poor me. Oh, there's my son calling saying, who's picking me up?
Are you supposed to be picking him up?
Yep.
What time is it?
4:45.
What time are you supposed to pick him up?
I don't know. He's probably saying I'm ready now.
Really?
Yeah.
But wait, we were supposed to do this at 6. Did you think you'd be done?
No. Well, oh. I had pushed everything, and then my wife was going to... I would have picked him up and been here at 6, but then my wife decides that she's going to a dinner.
So he's just going to have to wait?
I guess he'll have to wait a couple minutes.
Where is he?
In school.
Now I feel pressured.
Don't feel pressure.
Oh, he'll be all right?
Let me text him, tell him to Uber.
There you go.
See, we couldn't do that. We'd have to be... We'd have to take the bus.
Yeah. Or get a ride with your friend's parents. Or
here's my son. I'm done. Hold on.
Dude. How old's he?
16. Greatest kid in the world.
Really?
Oh,
thank God.
He's like a young me.
Hey, you know, good for you for having kids and having them turn out okay.
They're great, great kids.
Yeah?
So fortunate. Yeah, man. I mean, they're not as great as when people tell me about them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They have a different... Let me take that back. No, they're great.
Yes.
I know they're great because when they're out and other people say, your kids did X, Y, and Z, they helped me with this, and, you know, I have a toddler, and, you know, yeah. They're very mannerly.
Good people.
They're good people.
Are both your folks still alive?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they got grandparents?
They got grandparents on both
sides. They got relationships with that
person? And I had two great dads.
Yeah.
The stepfather.
Oh, he was a good one?
Great one.
Yeah. That's not. Yeah, that's a 50-50 thing. You know,
yeah. He was
stepfather.
Great, but like we've never had an argument.
Yeah.
But I always complained. Like if I wrote a book, I had two dads, but none of them played catch with me. Right? Like,
yeah.
My stepfather was like kind of hands off, like, you have a dad, I'm just here to pay bills, take care of you, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then my father was like, fuck it, you got a stepfather, he can pay for that shit. I never had no birds and the bees talk from anybody. My first sip, cigarette, whatever dads and sons do, there's some shit I missed.
Yeah. But it seems like you turned out all right.
I turned out pretty fucking, I had a great mom.
So the vibe thing just craps out pretty quick.
Craps out. Like,
and you're on billboards, dude. How old were you?
No, I was on billboards. The word vibe. So this is when I knew some shit was fucked up. Two things let me know. One, they had billboards of Keenan, and then they had the word vibe with white people written in the letters. No pictures of me. I was like, this is a sign, right? I was in magazines and stuff, but it's just like advertisements.
Right.
And then there was a big ass party for vibe, for Chris Spencer's coming out party.
Yeah.
It's at the Peterson Museum. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Nope.
Peterson Museum is, I go there.
Where is it?
This is where Biggie got shot.
Oh. That's why they had it there?
This is at the Vibe. It was a Vibe magazine party. And so I thought this was my party.
Yeah.
I go there and there's pictures of everybody but me. There's pictures of Puffy. There's pictures of Mary J. Blige. There's pictures of Toni Braxton.
So the writing was on the wall already before it even started?
I felt shit early.
Oh.
Listen to this. I remember the first show. They didn't even start off with me. It was Quincy Jones interviewing Bill Clinton via satellite.
Yeah.
We do the show. It was a credible show. Whoopi was on it. Fucking, I don't know. It was a big ass show.
But you're hosting it.
Now I come out. Quincy introduces me.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, the world knows Quincy. Let's have Quincy start off. So that happens. We're at the first meeting of the morning. I get a phone call. They're like, Chris Rock's on the phone.
Yeah.
I go, what? Chris Rock wants to talk to you. I'm like, okay. He goes, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
I go, what are you talking about? He said, what the fuck are you doing? He said, I said, what? He goes, you had the president of the United States on your TV show? I go, yeah, that was Quincy's friend. He goes, let me ask you something. When you see the president on TV, what do? I go, I turn the channel. He goes, and that's what motherfuckers was doing last night. I was like, shit. How did he get the number? Because it wasn't cell phones. This motherfucker called the Vibe office.
Interesting. And you'd not met him before?
Yeah, we were friends.
Oh, okay.
But the fact that he called the office and bring the phone to Chris.
Yeah. Do you think it was like how much of that becomes like a community thing? Like, you know, is that just a showbiz thing or is that sort of like, you know, we're trying to do something here. Why are you having that boring fucking president on here?
Absolutely. Why would I have the president on a late night talk show?
Yeah.
And then I'm not even interviewing him. This is Quincy Jones talking to Bill Clinton via satellite,
dude.
A screen.
Yeah.
And so I remember the first hiccup.
Yeah.
Bill goes, hey, Quincy. He goes, what's up, Bill? And everybody's like, oh, you're not supposed to call him by his first name. But, you know, Quincy Jones probably funded the motherfucker.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Bill don't care.
Yeah.
So that was it, right out of the gate.
Boom.
You know,
then I started doing sitcoms, commercials, a few movies here and there. And then I started writing for a lot of people. So like I was saying, you know, what's great about stand-up is either you blow up or when maybe one of your friends blows up.
Right.
And so when my friends were blowing up, the Jamies, the
You're tight with Jamie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they'll get award shows or they'll get gigs and they need people to write. And that's how my writing career kind of started.
Right.
Writing for Jamie for the, you know, the ESPYs and Cedric for this award show and Steve Harvey. And
how's Cedric doing?
He's great.
Oh, good.
Great guy.
He is. Great guy.
You've never heard anybody say fuck Cedric.
That's good.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw Cedric, it was the Aspen Comedy Festival. And it was really something because he can't breathe up there. And it was like, I think it was the first year they had an urban show.
Right.
And it was like Cedric and Bernie Mac in the snow.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was like, I'd never seen Bernie. I'd never seen anything like that guy.
That motherfucker was
insane. So good.
Incredible.
From what I could understand.
Yes.
There's a lot of topics that were not for...
Not for the Aspen crowd either.
I know, right, man. No. But it was so funny to see them up there. I can't remember who else was on that show, but it was kind of amazing.
I remember I did that fucking Aspen Comedy Festival.
Oh, really? As what?
I took an L.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
I bombed. I wanted to roll down the fucking the mountain.
Oh.
I'm not a festival guy.
What year was that? It's hard up there, man. You can't breathe up there. I tanked so hard up there on a TV show.
Damn.
Ate it bad.
What show?
It was called Kicking Aspen. And, you know, I was all immersed in telling stories and alternative kind of shit. And a friend of mine saw it. He said, I just watched Dragging Aspen.
Yeah, you can't tell those long stories on those little short form shows. You got to go joke, 15 seconds.
You do, man. Oh, God, did I tank bad.
Yeah.
I've eaten some serious shit on television. So, okay, so Vibe craps out. Is this when you thought about doing the boats?
No, a little bit later.
But like, were you headlining, dude?
So I never really did the road like people did the road.
Like, because I think that's why I could never place you.
Yes, I didn't do the road.
But did you have the time?
I had specialty gigs. I should have done the road.
You had the time.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the time to do it or the 45 minutes?
45 hour.
I don't know. Because I was a 20-minute champion.
Right.
But, you know, I had it because whenever I had to do some corporate shit for an hour, I did it. But I just never did the road. And I think I was spoiled because the road money, a whole week equaled exactly what Damon or Chris Rock or somebody was paying me to open for them.
Dude, like I never knew how much those fuckers were making on the road until I started making money on the road. Like, you know, you'd middle for a guy and they'd give you foot. Like, back when, you know, I was post-boom, but you could still make maybe $800.
Right.
For a Wednesday through Sunday middle with a little bit of travel.
Mm-hmm.
And these fuckers would come in, Jake Johansson, Rich Jenny, these
Jake
guys.
Jake Johansson!
Right. So you're like, you know, what are these? And then all of a sudden, when I start doing door deals now, I'm like, is this what these motherfuckers were making then?
And still
80% of the door? And they were walking away with a fortune. Some of those guys in the 80s. I never got it. I thought it was just sort of like, well, they must get like 1,400.
Right. Jake Johansson.
Because when I started headlining as a non-draw, you know, you'd be like, if you got 1,750, you're like, holy shit, man. Good week. And the fucking, and the condo?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I never did the condo either.
You missed out a whole chunk of shit. I never was a road dog, but I definitely did it.
Right.
You know, most, yeah.
Did you sell merch back then?
I sold merch up till, like, I was selling merch more recently, I think, when I was doing the road, right when the podcast started. I had buttons. I had fucking shirts. Yeah, I'd show up at the hotel. I never had a road manager because I just never thought to do that shit because, like, I wasn't making that much money.
Right.
But, you know, you'd have the fucking boxes shipped to the hotel. You never had all these sizes.
It's nothing worse when you see people ship the boxes to the hotel and then have to ship them back because they didn't sell much.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to find somebody to maybe pick it up for you.
Yeah,
I found the best thing to do is posters, because people want something, and you just have someone design like
posters.
An artist make a cool poster for the gig. And then it costs like $1 a piece. You sell them for $20. You sign them at the end. You meet people. Fucking make a couple thousand. And then you just
posters. So it's a picture of you, like
whatever. I just had different artists. Like I have fans who are artists, and I just say on the podcast, like, design me some posters. I'm going on tour. So I'd have like a dozen different posters.
Genius.
And I'd pay the artists.
Right.
And then you just like, it's not a big, it's not, you, there's no sizes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
One size fits all a poster.
People want to walk away with something. All right. So what? No road. What are you doing then? How do you make a living?
Commercials.
Oh, you did the commercials.
Writing. Sorry, the writing started.
Did you write for shows?
I wrote a punch up for like the Wayans Brothers show.
When did you get married? When did you start having kids and
that
shit?
That was 2000.
After Vibe?
Oh, yeah. Vibe is 97. I got married in 06.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you're like kind of old.
I'm an older feller, yeah.
To get married.
37, 38, I think it was.
Well, you knew.
I knew.
Did you always want to?
No. I wanted to be George Clooney.
Oh, yeah.
And then it got old.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck. Either maybe I don't have the stamina to be fucking all these girls, or I need to be with one. And I always knew eventually. Like, yeah. I saw the picture in my head.
Yeah.
Christmas and vacations, yeah, sure. And I wanted all that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wanted to be a whore, but I couldn't.
As you get older, it's hard, and it's certainly hard now.
Yeah, and nobody. I don't think girls liked me like that.
No.
To be the whore guy. You know what I mean? Like,
you're
I'm the guy.
Too nice a guy.
I'm the guy at the strip club that the girl decides to take a break and come talk to.
Yeah, yeah. How you doing?
Like,
baby?
My friends are like, I'm gonna take you back to the house and do all this shit. And they come and go, you remind me of my dad. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, fuck. I guess nothing's gonna happen with me and you.
Yeah. You need a
unless
ride?
You're fucking your dad.
Yeah. Which might.
Yes. That's probably why she's here. Yeah. So I got married and we had kids quick. Matter of fact,
what did she do?
She was a casting director.
Oh, really?
She did Entourage.
So she's still in the record.
And now she's producing now.
Oh,
yeah.
For you, or
with
you got
me,
a company?
With, right, yeah. Right. I just directed my first feature.
Right, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah. And so she started off as cast. I wrote it, yeah, part with my partner, Eric Daniel. Started off as a, she cast it, and then all of a sudden, she just started fixing all these holes. You know, independent movies, shit is going awry all over the place. And she just started fixing shit, and she's like, you know what? I need a fucking real title. And they gave it to her.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
So how much did you shoot it for? How much did you cost?
Under $10 million.
That's a pretty expensive indie.
Pretty good. Yeah, like when I think about my friends who are big time directors now, like their first movies, like Antoine Foucault, F. Gary Gray, and Malcolm Lee, they had like $2-4 million movies. John Singleton.
Yeah.
And for me to come out the gate with a big ass movie like this, like it better be good.
So you got backers and all that? Who's starring it?
Wesley Snipes, Tiffany Haddish.
Tiffany.
And then four very funny comedians. I don't know if you know Gary Owen, Faison Love, Bill Bellamy, and J.B. Smoove.
Bill Bellamy.
Yes.
That's another one. New York.
New York, yes.
Had that show.
Yeah. So it's about these five male exotic dancers that get back together after 30 years to help this woman save her hotel and club. And it was kind of like Magic Mike meets the Full Monty.
Mm-hmm.
The original name was My Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
And then like an idiot, I called him to see if it was okay. And he was like, no, motherfucker, it's not okay. I was like, shit, I should have just waited to get in trouble.
Do you have a relationship with Magic Johnson?
Yeah.
You know all of these people.
Black Hollywood is small.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a couple things. I've never left L.A., so I've run into people. I went to UCLA, I've run into people. Then I've had a little bit of TV fame. And then I write for all the award shows. So all the award shows, I'm going to see Oprah, Will, Magic, you know, Will I Am, Kanye.
Yeah.
And so I'm writing copy for them. So I'm becoming friendly with them.
Sure.
And then, you know, and then there's an after party. And then I hosted like three of the hottest urban comedy nights in LA.
You did.
I created Chocolate Sundays with my childhood friend, Poogie Wigginton, which is at the Laugh Factory. It's going on 20 some years strong.
That was you?
That was me. And then Fat Tuesdays, after Guy Tori left, my partner Jeru Tillman and I started doing Tripping on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Then I was like, you know what?
Where's that, the Improv?
That was at the Comedy Store in the main room.
Okay.
Right after Guy Tori finished.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? I had a lot of friends that were like, I'm not coming all the way to Hollywood. So then I started doing a room at the Savoy in Inglewood, not too far from the airport. And that held like 400-500 people.
Yeah.
And it would be packed every Wednesday night.
Really?
Because those people were dying for entertainment.
Yeah.
And what was great about them, as opposed to up here, no guest list.
Right.
Like people were like, fuck it, I'll pay $20. And what I learned from my partner Poogie, he would never advertise who was coming. He would advertise who you missed. So when Chris Tucker, Kevin Hart, Chappelle, Wanda, whoever came through, you'd be like, you should have been here last week because you missed X, Y, and Z.
Right. And then they're like, this week, who's here?
Yeah.
We don't want to talk about it.
We're not going to talk about it. But you remember 2 weeks ago, you fucked up and didn't go. And so I started bringing a lot of those people to Inglewood.
So you're making a lot of money producing the shows?
Not a lot of money.
But enough to get by?
I mean, private school money. So yeah. Enough, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's a hustle. What was the name of that place down on Pico that was a black?
The
guy?
Comedy Union.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enns Mitchell, a good friend of mine. I used to work there all the time.
What, that dude with the long, with the dreads?
Yeah,
yeah. I did, we shot an episode of my show down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember I did it. I think I did a set there once, if that's possible.
Absolutely. It was open every night.
Yeah.
Chelsea got her fucking start down there.
Chelsea.
Handler.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, there's a story. This is a true story. I'm fucking going to tell it. She goes to Montreal and bombs.
Yeah.
And whoever was supposed to see her didn't like it. And then Enns hooked it up for her to be, for people to see her again and do a showcase at the Comedy Union. And she killed. And then she became Chelsea Handler and forgot about Enns.
Oh, really? I think I kind of knew that story. Because I remember, like, I did a Comedy Central Presents taping with her.
Okay.
Right before the E! Network and all that stuff. When she was, maybe had one book out and she was doing stand-up. And it wasn't great.
No.
But...
you saw something.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I like her. She's been a champion of mine. I like her. I've interviewed her and she's you know, tough, but she's a good person.
Right.
Like a truly good person, I think. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I saw her documentary and I was like, oh, I'm in love with her.
Yeah. So this movie, that's a good cast. So that's what you're hanging it on Tiffany, huh?
They're hanging on Tiffany and Wesley. And then the other guys are so fucking funny.
I like this old Wesley face. I like what he's doing.
Yeah,
like he's weird.
You saw True Lies with him and Kevin? It's good.
I watched him in the Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh yeah, Dolomite.
Yeah, and I was like,
not Dolomite. Yeah, Dolomite and Coming to America 2.
Yes,
or 3.
Where I'm sort of like, oh, he's really embracing a weird old dude.
Yes,
like he's gonna do some weird shit.
Wait till you see him in this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's a real actor.
No, I know. Man.
He's a real actor. Like the talks we had before. I was like, you know, I'm used to motherfucker just take the script or whatever. Yeah. He's like, do you think he would? And I'm thinking, and then he should, and then a mustache or a goatee, and a ponytail or a perm. I'm like, oh, you're the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're hip-hop actors. We're like, you know, we have personality. We can memorize the lines, and there's hopefully some magical shit will happen on the day.
Tiffany's a natural.
Natural, yeah.
She's wild.
She kills this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it done?
Done. In the can. Not
really?
In the can, sorry. Editing.
Okay.
We're in post right now.
And you're looking at June?
June is July, yeah.
That's good. Then I'll plug it for you.
Yeah. And then I'll be known as a director.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kevin Hart and I created a TV show called Real Husbands of Hollywood.
Yeah, when's that going to be on?
That starts February 10th.
That's good. You can plug that.
Plugging February 10th on BET Plus, which nobody has, but you guys should go get.
Everyone's getting pluses now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maxes and pluses.
Yeah, yeah. BET Plus.
Yes.
Can you get it on your phone?
That's their streaming service. That's
get the it on your phone?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then we have a possibility of 13 people seeing it.
What's it called?
Real Husbands of Hollywood.
You and Kevin.
I created with Kevin, but Kevin, Nick Cannon, Nelly, Robin Thicke, Dwayne Martin, Boris Kojo, JB Smoove, Cynthia McWilliams. We have some guest stars that are great this year. We have Dr. Phil came on. We always have amazing guest stars.
Yeah.
We had Shaq. We've had Chris Brown.
What's the angle?
It's basically a spoof on all. Let me take it back. It started off as a sketch that I wrote for the BET Awards for Kevin.
Yeah.
And then, which was a spoof on all these housewife shows.
Yeah.
And it was Jermaine Dupri, Bobby Brown, Anthony Anderson, Nick Cannon, and Kevin. And it just blew up and went viral.
Yeah.
And then people were petitioning and creating campaigns and fake Facebook pages. This show needs to be on air.
Yeah.
And then the next year, I wrote for Sam Jackson on the BET Awards. We did the sketch again, and then it was just undeniable.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got to check it out.
How's Sam Jackson?
Fucking the real deal.
Yeah.
But he'll have to tell you some shit.
Yeah.
He'll be like, can we get one more take? Nope. Okay, then we're going to move on. I think you got it already. You're absolutely right, Sam. What was I thinking? This motherfucker's cold-blooded. Oh.
Nope.
And he looks at you like, I'm not doing it again. He's like, I'm like, why would you do it again? Let's see. Everybody, come on. Let's go. We're on the wrong set. Seriously.
Intimidating.
On purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he'll wink at somebody.
Yeah.
But he's great.
I love him. So you got a lot of things going on. Okay. And then you're on the Cosby doc. You're like a Cosby, official Cosby commentator.
Yeah.
Why'd you get that gig?
So I'm a connector in Hollywood, right? Like, clearly, people call me to get other people, right? Yeah. And then I go, hey, motherfucker.
Is that okay?
And then I say, me too. No.
Okay.
No, not at all. But I'm fucking making sure I get a check.
Yeah.
But I'm the guy that they go, you won't believe the calls I get. Yeah. I got a call one time from the White House.
Yeah.
That said, we heard Will Smith is in town and President Barack would like to play golf with him.
Yeah.
I'm like, why the fuck are you calling me? They go, we know you know him.
You know Will.
And so I hooked up Will and fucking Barack Obama.
When he was in office.
When he was in office. So I always get these calls. I saw
Chris Rock could track you down, you know, at the office, but they right. can't find, the White House can't find Will.
The White House
it's
can't
funny find. You mentioned that about Chris, because he's called my cell phone before, and I'm like, what? I was to dinner with my dad, and I get a call, and it's not a number I recognize. I'm like, hello? He goes, it's Chris Rock. And I'm like, what's happening?
What did he want?
He had listened to an episode. I think he had listened to like the Fred Stoller episode or something.
Fred Stoller! Yeah.
And he's like, he just wanted to tell me.
All
right,
I got to go back and listen to all these fucking episodes if you've had all these people.
Oh, yeah, Stoller, dude. I've had all of them. I had Billy Braver on.
I don't know Billy Braver.
That's before your time, before my time. He was a Comedy Store guy.
Uh-huh.
All right, so the Cosby thing.
Mm-hmm.
How that happened?
So they called, so a friend of mine was producing and they said, we need you to help us get some people. And you too.
Yeah.
So it was one of those. So I helped them get
Add on.
I
you too, man.
I used to get offended, but I was like, fuck it. Yes, me too. I'm coming.
Okay.
And so I helped them. A lot of people didn't want to do it. Matter of fact, I think Kamau was on CNN or somewhere saying more people said no than yes.
Huh.
Yeah. A lot of people didn't want to touch that topic.
Because of the,
you don't want to seem like you're advocating for him. And then you don't want to shit on him because he was your hero growing up. You know what I mean? So people...
Well, everyone had to be kind of diplomatic.
Right.
You know, that was the whole point of that thing is that, you know, we can exist with both sides of this man.
Mm-hmm.
We can have our good memories right. and still realize he's a fucking monster.
Right.
I mean, that seemed to be the point of it.
Right.
And I don't know who it was really directed at. I have to assume the black community on some level.
I think everybody, because remember, like, he was everybody's
dad. No, I get it. I get it. But, like,
no, for us, for sure.
There's a lot of sort of like, nah. Like,
oh, yeah, I was in denial for sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, no, ain't no black woman came forth. And all of a sudden, it's like Beverly Johnson, as you'll see in the documentary.
That was kind of the one that got you.
I was like, oh, shit, because she was a friend of mine.
And you knew her before it, right?
Yeah.
But you knew she was a victim, though?
I know she was a victim. No.
You knew her before she
I knew her before, yeah. I know her daughter since she was like, family.
So you knew her before she was public with it?
Yes.
I see.
And then when I saw her face when she said it, I was like, ruh-roh.
Yeah.
This could be real.
Really, it took that.
Because it wasn't like she was trying to get something from him. It wasn't like they went all the way through with the deed. She said she drank the cappuccino, felt something and said, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
Because she had, I guess, I don't know if she had done drugs before or she just knew.
Yeah, she knew. You know
and, and she got out of there. And I was like, why would somebody tell a story like that?
I remember she had a struggle to get out.
Right.
Not because he was holding her, but she was fucked up.
She was fucked up.
And she just knew she had to get out.
Right. And here's what's funny. We had heard stories about him.
I didn't. I didn't know anything.
Oh, I heard stuff before.
Well, apparently people have been hurting for Hannibal to do what he did.
Right.
It had to be out there. I knew nothing.
Oh, no. I know since
then. I haven't heard from 90s. That guy in a while.
Hannibal. I see Hannibal every now and then.
What's he up to?
He's doing fucking specials and still doing well.
Okay. I just, for some
movies.
And I see him occasionally in a movie. I haven't seen him lately, though.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you get the call to find some people for the Cosby thing. Yeah. No one wants to do it. So no now you're going to do all of it.
Yes. I'm imitating other comedians. I said, yeah, put that little.
You and Godfrey. You're the ones.
Godfrey. That shit seemed like it was the Godfrey special.
Well, I guess he opened for the show.
Right. Right. He was the warm-up, yes.
So he had somewhat of a relationship with him.
I wish he would have talked more about that, but he didn't really get into that.
Just
but.
Dropped it real quick and did a few impressions.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, the thing about that doc, it's the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that doc lives, man.
Right.
Is that you get to hear the full story from these old ladies, right? Who, you know, don't know each other. That's what got me.
Right.
Is like the ones that kept it to themselves and then they heard the fucking pill thing. And like, holy shit.
No, I'm not the only one.
The pill story. The there's no way.
Right.
And I think he gave them a nice amount of time.
Yeah. And the thing about us as a culture, we were like, you're not going to take down another one of us. And it was like, oh, they're trying to get us. They try to take.
The weird thing is, you say that, like, you know, you're not going to take down another one else, but like, I think he lost half of the culture with that fucking moralizing bullshit anyway.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, I mean,
but a lot of us just thought of, a lot of us was just like, he's just a cranky old man.
Yeah.
And here's what's fucked up. A lot of the shit he was saying was true.
Yeah.
But the shit that we said, like he said in his apology, I thought it was just us talking about us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Although he really he knew it wasn't, but it's some shit that you would say to us.
Right, you knew it. Yeah.
But you know the world was hearing it. And it just looked bad that you're talking shit about us for everyone to hear.
Well, it's like that famous, the first big Chris Rock bit.
Right. Black people versus niggas.
Yeah. I mean, that's that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've always talked like that.
Yeah.
There's some niggas at that party over there. We ain't going. You know what I mean? Like, we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if he regrets saying it, but that shit was big.
Who?
That bit. That Chris Rock. I wonder if he regrets doing that bit.
It's a great bit.
Great bit.
Why would he regret it?
Because he got a lot of backlash from it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
niggas didn't like it.
Sure. but there's an honesty.
No, actually, black people didn't like
it. Right. It's honesty.
If there's such a thing.
But that's one of the issues, is that the sort of like keep it amongst ourselves thing.
Right.
You know, there's that cuts both ways.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think I thought you did good in the Cosby documentary. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good talking to you, man.
Absolutely.
You feel good? Your kids taken care of? Everything's good?
I can make halftime? No, we missed the game.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
I'll see. Are you working tonight?
I am.
I'll see you over there.
All right.
All right. That was Chris Spencer again on Twitter. You can go to his website as well. See where he's on tour. He'll be at the Virginia Beach Funny Bone this Friday and Saturday. I will be in San Diego this Friday, February 11th at the Observatory North Park. Two shows. Got next week, Napa, California, Friday, February 18th at the Uptown Theater, and San Francisco, Saturday, February 19th. Two shows at the Palace of Fine Arts. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour to get links to tickets. And no music today. No music today because I'm in New York in the nicest hotel room I've ever stayed in. All right? Enough. Boomer lives! Monkey. LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere. Of course, shout out to the living cats. Buster and Smushy. Booster and Sammy. Sammy Red. Schmooly. It was his birthday a few days ago. Sammy's a year old. All right. Goodbye.